up to yonder, beyond the lights, neon, fluorescent. My essence is something to ponder. Your talent ain't something to squander. Blessed and favored so highly, anointed and portrait I might be. This is that all that podcast featuring Kyrie.
Welcome back to another episode, guys. I'm with my guy here, Chris Jones. Just to give a little background on him or what we'll be talking about today, he has an educational company that is called Planting Seeds, Tutoring and Test Prep. And he also has a nonprofit that is called Seekers of Knowledge Foundation. So, you know, as I'm looking through, you know, our messages back and forth about, you know, what we're going to talk about, both right. of these things, the educational company, obviously, and the nonprofit, both deal with education. So obviously there, that's something important to you. So can you kind of give us your background on, you know, first of all, I went into this kind of fast. Audience, what's up, Chris Jones? You know, how you doing? He drove in from Dallas, you know, so I appreciate that because the weather's kind of icky. So, you know what I mean? So what's up, man?
Yeah, man, I'm chilling. I appreciate you bringing me on your platform now.
Yeah, yes, sir. All right, now we can get into it because I was like, dang, I went into that. But so, yeah, like I was saying, obviously education is important to you. So can you kind of give us the background on your educational background, or, you know, was it your parents? Was it what made you want to get into giving back through education?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. Mm-hmm. I think for education, it was kind of just like in my family. When I look at like my grandparents, my parents, or like my aunts and my uncles, everybody was pretty much in education in some form or fashion, mm-hmm. Whether it be through school districts or just educating in different facets of life, you know, different plethora of things that they're knowledgeable in. So for me, it felt like it was kind of natural. I kind of got into education as far as helping people in college, being a tutor for college students, and then working with students that were at Title I schools. Mm-hmm. So that translated into creating a business.
Gotcha. So how long have you been running your business?
Since 2015, so seven going on 8 years. Yeah.
Wow. So for us, this is a selfish question because I want to know what goes into starting a nonprofit. Like if we're having a conversation now, and I would say, "Hey, Chris, mm-hmm. What goes into starting a nonprofit for somebody who might want to start one? What kind of advice could you give us?"
For sure. Mm-hmm. Well, Seekers of Knowledge is nonprofit. Planting Seeds is for profit.
Right.
That's where I started first. Mm-hmm. But yeah, to answer your question, for Seekers of Knowledge, going through that is fairly new for me. It's in the infant stage. I did that about a year and a half ago. I would say most people should go through an attorney, a nonprofit attorney, to get the paperwork done and everything correctly set up for you. I think a lot of times people want to do it themselves. Mm-hmm. And when I say people, I'm talking about myself. I try to do it myself, cut corners, but really setting up your foundation or your nonprofit organization the correct way, I believe, is going through a nonprofit attorney. I'll get all the paperwork documentation ready for you, figuring out what your mission, your value statement, you know, what are those things, as well as, you know, websites, you know, the typical things, right? Website, social media, all those different things need to be set up to really create your base. And then from there, what is your course of action of how you're going to get donors, how you're going to get people to support your mission and what you're trying to accomplish? And then what is your plan, your strategy for that plan? Is it a year, 2 year, 5 year plan, 10 year plan?
Right.
Yeah.
So what would you say is your quote unquote target audience, or do you have one? With both your nonprofit and your company, is it more like lower income kids, or is it both? Like, what do you focus on, or do you have a focus, or you just help kids, period?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So I think in the beginning, it was really about helping as many kids as possible. Mm-hmm. And then when it becomes a business, you really got to define, you know, what is the best way that you can market the services that you're offering,
right?
And who can actually afford the services that you're offering, because everybody can't. And I think that's what really, you know, catapulted me creating a nonprofit. Mm-hmm. Is my nonprofit is focused on Title I schools, where I initially got my start at, working with kids in that area, in that environment, and seeing what they go through. I mean, I remember being in college working with students that were in Title I schools, and their story is very interesting. You mm-hmm. don't know where these people come from. They got a smile on their face every day. Little do you know, the only meal that they're going to have today is at school.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Little do you know that they're sleeping in the car, you know, but you would never know that until you get to know the kids. And I think for me, the nonprofit was able to create something of value that they could come in and be a part of. You know, some kids don't know anything about scholarships. So what do we try to do? We want to give out scholarships. For planting seeds, it was a little bit different as far as like targeting your audience. Like, okay, suburban areas, well-to-do areas, you know, and zip codes, things like that, finding those people. And then also figuring out what type of people can afford those services. So right. I think we define it two different ways for the for-profit and nonprofit.
Gotcha. So you can speak to this, and I want you to speak to this because you're in it. I have conversations with people all the time about the discrepancies of opportunity in this country. And, you know, the people that I debate with, they'll bring up, to me, anomalies like Obama or, you know, you know, a person that's like, you know what I mean? It's like, that's one person. That kind of, you know, that kind of mindset. And I'm like, no, like in these neighborhoods, like it's not the same. Like you have overcrowded classrooms. You have, you know, like you said, that's their only meal. Like you got stuff going at home. So can you speak to that? Because you're in it. Like you see it even, you know, you can speak to it better than I can. So to that, what do you say?
Yeah, I think it's... That's a very detailed question. There's so many different points that you can pull from. But I would say that people that come from that environment, it's very hard to expect them to try to be successful and want to be successful from all the things they have to deal with in that environment. A lot of people are not aware of that environment. When I talk to my friends, or just people that I'm acquaintances with, the stuff that they share just shows that they're not really in touch with what that environment produces. And a lot of the times education is, I mean, most of the times, all the times, I really believe education is a passport to the future. It's really going to open all the doors for you. Education just isn't fair from the beginning for everybody. We don't get the same opportunities. So while you're over here in a suburban area with all the resources to be successful, these people in Title I schools are in this area. The teachers, you don't get the best teachers. You don't get the best resources. Nobody's showing you how to get credits before you even enter into college, right? So you can be ahead of all your peers and all these other people. Nobody's showing you that, hey, being an engineer, being a lawyer, being an accountant is something that you can actually do. Why? Because in those areas, what do you see? Usually the dope boy is on the corner. That's the quickest way for you to make money. So I always tell people, if you was 13, if you was 14 years old, opportunity, education sounds great. But if you saw somebody making $100, $200, $500 million, which one are you going to choose at 13? Because if I recall, when people in the suburbs, 13, 14 years old, you want to be cool by any means.
Right.
And by any means, at 13, 14 years old, you're willing to do anything. And it was dumb back then, but sometimes you got out of it because of where you're located, your resources, the community that you're in. So you got a little slap on the wrist. You had money. Okay, cool. Your parents were lawyers. Your parents were well-to-do.
Yep.
They got you out of those situations. Don't work like that over there. So they don't really have the same opportunities from the beginning. So your expectation of them just being like Obama is unrealistic.
It really is. So, and you broke that down well. So, yeah, so my people that I'm debating, I'm playing that clip. I'm not arguing no more. I'm just pressing play on that part of this podcast. But so here on in your company, Planting Seeds, you say you partnered with 15 organizations, whether it's school districts, nonprofits, you know, et cetera. Now, when you're getting ready to do good, I'm pretty sure you expect things like, I'm doing something good. People are going to be, like, accepting of this. They're going to blah, blah, blah. So did you have any hiccups, like people going against you, or not necessarily going against you, but giving you, you know, pushback on things you were trying to accomplish?
Absolutely. Anybody that wants to be an entrepreneur, I always encourage them to, one, you got to be passionate about what you're doing. You got to be willing to accept no. No is going to come 10 times more, 100 times more than yes will ever come your way. So when I'm talking to people interested in entrepreneurship or just peers that are in entrepreneurship, that's one of the common things that we discuss all the time. It's like, man, like our story from when we started to where we are now, especially when you're a person, it's your first year getting into business or your second year or third year, a lot of people not looking your way. It's almost like when you're 20 and you're developing yourself. Right. Once you get 30, 40, 50, you got things under your belt. When you come into a room, people acknowledge you, people are aware of what you do, people want to work with you. It's the same thing in business. I mean, your first 2 years, nobody oh, I see what you're trying to do over there. You know, they'll say things like your little business. I see what you're
doing.
Yeah,
right? Put the little on there.
Yeah, yeah. Right? They gotta, yeah. The side hustle. I see what you're trying to create. Mm-hmm. It's true in everything that you do. People would rather make fun of it or watch it from afar as you're going through the process. Like if you was going to the gym, you go from skinny, then you get buff or whatever, you're trying to lose weight. People laugh at it at first, or they make it a joke until mm-hmm. they see you do it, and then they ask how you do it. Like, right. Oh, give me the steps. Give me the blueprint. I see what you're working with. I see what you're creating. And now they want to start partnering with you or getting your advice. So that's just the natural progression of it.
Right. So I love that you said with the nonprofit in our conversation, that you provide financial literacy. Now, you know, you hear all the Absolutely. Time, like, people on social media, you know, me, you know, people is just like, man, you know, we didn't learn how to write a check in school. Like, we didn't learn about taxes, yeah. like all of this financial stuff that I learned most of my financial stuff from Earn Your Leisure. Shout out to Earn Your Leisure podcast there. But so why did you think it was so important to provide the financial literacy part to kids right now, instead of waiting until they're an adult?
Man, it's so funny you say that, because like as an accountant, you know, my background, like numbers is just what I do. Like mm-hmm. I love calculating numbers. I don't pocket watch or nothing like that.
Yeah.
You know, just numbers, you're aware of them. And I think that for me as an accountant, seeing myself go through college, mm-hmm. like some people in certain areas or communities have kind of already been taught that. Like, it was just a lingo. Like, I remember being in college, people talking about, you know, investing in this, doing this with their money. I'm like, it's not that I wasn't aware, but I wasn't really taught, like, to the T how to do that. Like,
right.
They talking about 401ks, and we're like, nice. What are you talking about with your money? You're going to do this. And my parents set me up when I was young with a brokerage account.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, that wasn't necessarily something that was fully ingrained in me. Like, I had an idea, but it wasn't something that was like, oh, at 8 years old, you're going to understand how to invest in stocks and things like that. So,
right.
I think for me, EYL was a great platform for mm-hmm. me to learn a lot. There's so many other different podcasts I've listened to, so many books that I've read. And I think for somebody at 8 years old, 10 years old, 12 years old, 15 years old, really what you're doing is getting a head start, because the biggest advantage you have at a young age is time.
Right.
When you're 30, 40 years old and you're trying to, you know, invest and trying to get into financial literacy.
You got family now.
Exactly.
Bills.
Other priorities that come into play.
Right.
So it's not that you can't do it, but it's also like it definitely helps when you're 15, 17, 18. You're doing all the right steps to be financially sound.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that be, hey, when you're going to school, you're figuring out what degree works for you. You're figuring out how much you want to spend on school as far as, you know, getting into debt. You're looking at scholarships. You're looking at grants. You're just being more sound. You understand credit and debit. You understand how you can work with that. You understand lines of credit. Like, there's just so many different things within financial literacy you can dig into
mm-hmm.
To really help you put yourself in a great position 20 years later.
Right. What is the biggest problem that you see with the educational system? Because we just got done talking about, you know, them not teaching us like basic financial things that we need to know. But it's so many other problems with it. You know, we have all these kids, and we're trying to, you know, force all these kids who are unique in their learning capabilities. Right. You know, I mean, so, like for me, if school was a song, I would be at Harvard, like, because I got it. You know what I mean? I know albums front to back. Right. You know what I mean? So that's how I register things, and I read a lot. You know what I mean? So that's me.
Right.
But another kid would be a different way. But we're trying to put everybody under the same umbrella and be like, y'all learn like this.
Yeah.
So what is some of the main problems you see with our current educational system?
Yeah, man. I think there's so many different ways to look at this and unpack it.
Mm-hmm.
The first one would be, when I'm working with school districts, one of the common things that I see is teacher shortage.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of shortage in educators.
Right here, I didn't want to cut you off, but right here in Houston, it's huge.
Yeah.
In Houston ISD,
yeah,
it's a problem.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. So they're being overworked and undercompensated.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where it starts. So if you're America, you got to be looking within and saying, okay, who are our future leaders of tomorrow? It's going to be our younger generation. Are we doing everything that we can to help this younger generation?
The
answer would be no. How do we fix that? Okay, well, we need to compensate the people that are going to instill the values, the core values into these students and what's important. Mm-hmm. I think also is redefining, like, what is important in the school system. What are we studying? You know, if we think about some of the classes we was taking in high school and then in college, was we really applying those? You know what I mean?
Right.
Some of those are good. We should keep. And then some things we should add, you know, like we talked about earlier. Financial literacy should be a requirement for you to graduate. You should or you have to take this type of class. There's so many other different classes I feel like we should instill into the school system, but I do think in a way it has been broken. When you look at it from, it's really, at the end of the day, capitalism. I get it. When you look at resources and where community and people are at, you look at your property values, it's probably a good school there. If your property values are high, it's probably coming from the school. When I look at it, when I purchase real estate, two homes in Allen, Allen's, if anybody knows about Allen area, Frisco, McKinney from the Dallas area, those are huge schools. But when you, when I look at my property tax bill, majority of it is going to the high school, to the funding of the school systems, because they have an overflow of resources for the community. That's not true in some of these Title I's. Their funding comes differently. The funding can be a little icky, like fickle when it comes down to it, how the funding is being used, things that I've heard. So, yeah, I mean, there's just so many different cracks and crevices you can find within the school system. If they refine that, though, I think America could be in a good place. But if is a big question.
Yeah, big if.
When.
Big if. Especially when they're profit. We don't want to get to
it. Yeah, right.
But, but also with the places, the areas like McKinney or Frisco, with the resources going to the schools, they're getting it right back because those kids go off. They go to college. They get six-figure jobs. They come back. And it just is a full circle. So a big hot button issue right now is, you know, student debt. And Supreme Court just blocked it. I don't know for how long, but they just blocked it. So you have, it's like a very divisive issue in the country. Like some people who, you know, finish college and they're paying back loans and they're like, if I had to pay back my loans, then they need to pay back our loans. I mean, their loans. So, you know, what is your stance on that? Do you feel like, you know, it's just one of those things like, hey, you had to do it, but it's probably in the best interest for us not to have so much debt? Because I had a friend, actually Mariah, who her husband, he's from Germany, and they don't have that there. And he was able to stack his bread because he didn't have to worry about student debt. You know what I mean? So if you look at us, and we're supposed to be the leader, you know, but we're so behind in everything. And we have piles and piles and piles and piles and piles of debt for people who go to college. So what is your stance on that?
You know, I haven't really dove too much into the topic. I guess I am one of the people that you're sharing with. I paid off my student loan.
Yeah.
So how I feel about people, you know, being able to get kind of like a get out of jail free card.
Right.
In a way, when I first heard it, it kind of irritated me a little bit because you're like, dang, well, what are you going to do about the people that did pay?
Right.
It's almost kind of like true for people that set themselves up as far as like you purchase real estate and then you got squatters that are staying in your real estate property. So what is the government doing?
Reparations.
That's a different conversation. But
we need that too.
But yeah, I mean, it's just kind of like you're doing the right thing, but you're kind of getting not in trouble, but per se, but like you're not getting the benefits that other people are getting when they didn't do the proper steps for it.
Right.
Now, even with that being said, though, even with student loan debt, I do agree, though, while I initially was a little irritated by it, I would say that I understand. And it doesn't really bother me as much because the truth is some of those people that got student loan debt, that was kind of like the only opportunity they had to go to school.
Right.
You know, so I'm not opposed. If you're going to go get educated, I'm all in for it. how much do we give back?
Right.
How much student loan do we cover?
I got a funny story, and I'm going to put our friend over here on the spot. Okay. So, so there is this article, right, on Twitter about them coming to this agreement that, you know, law students starting like 2024 or something did not have to take the LSAT. You know what I mean? And I sent it to her, who, you know, is about to be, you know, lawyer, and she was pissed. So, you know, that kind of reminded me of, she was like, if I had to take that test, that test hard as shit. Yeah. I had to take that test, y'all gonna have to take it too. Right. So I understand. I understand.
That's funny.
She tried so hard not to be heard. So.
Let it out.
Yeah, let it, just go ahead and let it out. But, yeah. Okay, so we've been talking a lot about education, but we haven't talked about yours. I want you to brag on yourself, right? You know, just tell the people your educational background, you know, where you graduated from. You know, you're an accountant, you're in real estate, you know, you're, like I said in text message, you're a Renaissance man. So go ahead, brag on yourself.
Yeah, man. So from Dallas, went to school undergrad for accounting at Texas State. That was tough getting through that.
Hey, it's part of school.
Yeah. Man, I went to a couple of different schools before that, but I finished up at Texas State. Then I went to Texas A&M Commerce for my master's, business administration. Kind of just dove into creating businesses. I still do accounting. And real estate is something that I'm really into. I really do like the different ways that you can make money through real estate, some of the benefits as far as like taxes as well. What else? Man, that's pretty much it as far as like business is concerned. I mean, I've jumped into other things, but those things are kind of under the works, so I don't really like want to express on it too much until it really happens. You know what I mean?
Got you.
Yeah.
Hey man, you're doing it, bruh.
I'm trying to get the podcast like you got the podcast.
Hey man,
you got to brag on yourself.
Ain't nothing to it but to do it.
So get active.
That's it. I gotta say this right quick because you say you're from Dallas.
Yeah.
And I can't help but notice that you have a Raiders hat on. Is that something there or, you know?
It just, you know, I just happened to buy it, but it wasn't, you know, I'm not a Raiders fan. The only thing I'll take away from the Raiders is my fantasy is looking quite well because I got Devontae Adams.
Okay.
Derek Carr.
Shout out to Devontae Adams. Because I'm a Cowboys fan, so I just want to.
Same. Okay. Absolutely. We good there.
This guy. All right. Man. He's a Cowboys fan.
They put on performers yesterday.
What? Did we? Hold on. This is about to turn into undisputed. So. The most dominant performance that in franchise history on the road. Did you see it? Stop playing with us. But let's get back to the kids. So for those of us, like I said, that's looking for advice on nonprofiting, how do you go up? Because you said you guys give out scholarships. So how do you go about getting funding for that?
Well, shout out to Jen.
Hey, shout out Jen. You're making all kind of rounds in this podcast.
She's been very helpful in that. And then I've had, you know, when I did the scholarships, I started this like 4 years ago, roughly. It went through planting seeds.
Okay.
So it would just come out of our budget and we would fund scholarships for students, whether it be free tutoring for half the school year. Like a semester, we would cover that, or it'd be scholarships for students that are going off to college or they're transferring to another college. So that's something we started, about 4 years ago. From there, this past year, we finally transferred over to a nonprofit. So that's our first step. Next step is that we want to start collaborating and partnering with organizations to see if we can find people that would love to help us on the same mission and value system that we have.
How many... Do you have, like, a number of the kids that you've helped? Like, a specific number?
Man, I don't have a number of...
Got a ballpark?
Man, if I had to think for the past 7 years, I'm going to say a good 5,000, probably.
Like, damn, 5,000?
Yeah,
see, good 5,000. Let me say this. So I was looking at, you know, you got the Kyrie Irving drama with, you know, the... You know,
is he reinstated yet?
Yeah, he played last night.
Okay.
With the Jewish comments or whatnot. And so I was looking at the black Israelites. They went to the game last night and lined up, supporting him. And my thought was, you know, sometimes the sometimes you have to go outside the building and protest.
Right, right.
But I think what's more important is the after. Because I was thinking the whole time, I was like, dude, they could have went to a school in the hood and did something. They could have fed some hungry kids. You know, they could. I guess what I'm trying to say is the action part. Now, I remember when Jay-Z partnered with the NFL and they had their press conference. And, you know, he got a lot of flack for saying we were past kneeling. But what the extended version of that, what he said was, he's like, you know, I'm about actionable items. He was like, you know, what is everybody doing? I can show you what I've done every day this year. Like, I can show you how many people I got out of jail. I can show you how many people I sent to college. I can show you, like, I'm doing. Mm-hmm. So my point is, with you, is you're doing. It's like, a lot of people can talk, you know, right now everybody has an opinion because of social media, but that's it. Like, you know, it's easy to sit at home, right, and see something going on and comment on it and tweet and hit send and lay back down. You know what I mean? But I respect people who are doing something. 5,000 kids, mm-hmm, that's directly impacted by one person. I'm sure you have a team, but I'm saying, like, it was your vision, your idea, by one person. So I love that, the actionable items. I love that.
It's that resiliency, man.
Yeah.
Being able to, yeah, going back to dealing with no's and stuff like, mm-hmm, that. Absolutely. I think for me, I mean, you feel the same way, absolutely, because you're doing the exact same thing in your life.
Appreciate it.
You got to be around people that are the same wavelength as you. I think that's so important. It's, mm-hmm, something that I made a mistake on. In the beginning, I was finding people for different reasons that I hang out with them. Mm-hmm. Wasn't related to, are we on the same mission and statement and the same purpose? I think defining your purpose is huge. Mm-hmm. If you can define your purpose, then you can walk with a different step, different pep in your step. You know where you're going, you know where you're headed. And the people that should be around you, they'll surround themselves by you. But you got to go find people that are on the same purpose, same drive that you have.
Facts. So there's a saying, I heard it, I don't know if it was Michelle Obama, somebody, yeah, of that nature, but they were saying that education is the great equalizer. Do you believe that?
Absolutely. when you look at what education does for a lot of people, mm-hmm, I mean, it's kind of going back to what I said, it just opens so many doors. When you become more educated, even when you present something that you may not agree with, you come way more educated on your topics and your viewpoints. You're more clear on where you're, and, mm-hmm, precise with what you're coming with. Somebody that's uneducated, you can see that.
Right.
You can tell when they're uneducated, when they're sharing their thoughts, their opinions about life.
Facts. Well, man, look, this is a great interview. I think you're doing great. I'm interested to see, because I know you're not done. I know you're going to do more. But just kudos, man. Like, this is real, like, real impact. Like, yeah, this, you can touch it. Like, yeah, it's 5,000 kids. I can't get over that number.
Yeah.
5,000 kids, and you're one person. So imagine if, you know, we rely less on government and more on what we can do for us.
Yeah.
The sky is the limit. The
sky is the limit. Absolutely.
So, yeah, man, is there anything else you wanted to add? You know, tell the people. I guess you can tell them where to find you. You know, you can tell them how they can contact you if they want to, you know, get involved with the company or the nonprofit.
Yeah, absolutely. So on IG at Planting Seeds Tutoring, if you are looking to instruct in any way, capacity, we do tutoring, test prep, after school, enrichment, summer camps, you name it. So if you know somebody or know somebody that knows somebody, then absolutely go through there, plantingseedstutoring.com. So those are ways that you can reach out to me. I just want to leave this part too, is just like encouraging people that in entrepreneurship, I talk to tons of people about this, like friends or peers that are just like uncertain of when to start or how to start. What I would encourage you to do is to start. Nothing is going to be perfect. Perfection comes at the end. Excellence through the process is what you're looking for. Be excellent through the process. Refine your skills. Understand how you can be impactful. And when you carve out your artistry or your skill set and what you can be really good at, the benefits will come. But any type of doubt, just start. Starting creates a lot of different lanes for you to move forward with, but you got to start first.
Right. So I always say that starting is the hardest part. Once you get past that, the momentum will carry you.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, man, I'll be remiss without, you know, thanking Jen for making this happen, because she was on me for a good month. She's like, man, you got to do this with my friend Chris. Like, y'all would be great together. Like, she's like, every day. Like, so she, this.
Two light-skinned brothers, you know,
right,
what I'm saying?
This episode is definitely dedicated to you, Jen, because you made it happen. You facilitated this greatly. So with that, yeah, man. So for the listeners, I want to leave you with this and just know the impact that you can have. Just you. Like, don't think that something is too big, you know, a project is too big. You know, if you have something in your heart you want to do, like Chris said, just do it. Just start. And we can all make if everybody did a little, you know, a little something, you know what I mean? It'll be exponentially great. So with that, we are out. Yeah, man, I'm just happy, man. I'm happy about this episode because I like to see brothers. I sound like I'm in the 60s. I like to see brothers doing great things. You know what I mean? Also, I want to say this because a lot of people in the media, they see a lot of black men doing nonsense. All right. So, of course, they're going to feed you that and not feed you what we're doing. So I want to get that out there. Like, look, we are doing great things. You know what I mean? It ain't all what the media is trying to portray. So, yeah. 444, that's when we end it, baby. This is great. Yeah, look, everything's lining up.
This is that.